Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 87, Text 31. Am I right today? Yes. Okay. Now, I'm not a great scholar, nor a Sanskrit scholar, so I'll do the best I can. Nagatata ubhava prakriti purushayor ajayor. Ubhaya uja bhavatya subhrito jala buddhavat. Svahita ime tato vivida namagunai parame. Sarita ivarnave maduni zilayur ashesha rasa. Anybody else? Sorry. Go to the word for word. Okay, yeah, the students want to do it. Nagatata upava prakriti purushayor ajayor. Very nice. Nagataka upava prakriti purushaya rajaya. Do you all want to try it? Okay, students together.
Thank you.
Sounded like some Gandharvas just arrived. Very nice. Nagatate does not happen. Udbhava, the generation. Prakriti of material nature. Purushayo, and of the soul who is her enjoyer. Ajayo, who are unborn. Ubaya, of both. Yuja, by the combination. Bhavanti, come into being. Asubrata, living bodies. Jala, on water. Budbuddha, bubbles. Sounds a bit like bubbles, isn't it? Budbuddha. But, like. Tvayi, in you. Te ime, these living beings. Tata, therefore. Vivida, various. Nama, with names. Gunai, and qualities. Parame, in the supreme. Sarita, rivers. Iva, as. Arnave, within the ocean. Maduni, in honey. Liliu, become merged. Ashesha, all. Rasaha, flavors. Translation. Neither material nature nor the soul who tries to enjoy her are ever born, yet living bodies come into being when these two combine, just as bubbles form where water meets the air. And just as rivers merge into the ocean, or the nectar from many different flowers blends into honey, so all these conditioned beings eventually merge back into you, the Supreme, along with their various names and qualities. Purport. Without proper spiritual guidance, one may misunderstand the Veda's description of the living entities emanating from the Lord to mean that they have come into being in this process and will eventually pass again into non-existence. But if the living entities were to thus have only temporary existence, then when one of them would die, his remaining karma would simply vanish without being used up. And when a soul would be born, he would appear with unaccountable karma he had done nothing to earn. Furthermore, a living being's liberation would amount to the total eradication of his identity and being. So that was one thing that really drove me to search for spiritual life, that if it's all over when you die and you come fresh, it's just a new, then why do some babies suffer? Why does that happen? It's kind of a, so here he's saying just that thing. Then if that was the case, then why would people come and have karma? And then what would happen to all the activities they'd done over their lifetime? What would happen to the reactions from that? The truth is, however, that the soul's essence is one with Brahman's, just as a small portion of space contained within the walls of a clay pot is one in essence with the all-expanding sky. And like the making and breaking of a pot, the birth of an individual soul consists of his first being covered by a material body, and his death or liberation consists of the destruction of his gross and subtle bodies once and for all. Certainly, such birth and death take place only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Do you understand that concept of the clay pot? Do any of you understand that? Okay, just like if we made a clay pot, okay, and it had nothing in it, what would be inside? Air, right. So there'd be air inside this pot. And it's the same air that's all over, right? The total expansion of air. Okay? So we're like that. We're part of the air. We're spirit souls, and we're part of Krishna, who's the all-pervasive living entity, right? And then we come into this clay pot, which is the body. The body is like that clay pot. So when the clay pot is finished, when we're finished with this body, then we go back again to Krishna. Okay? Understand? Just like that air, once that clay pot's broken, the air just goes back into the air. Okay? The combination of material nature and her controller that produces the numerous conditioned beings and material creation is likened here to the combination of water and air that produces countless bubbles of foam on the surface of the sea. Just as the efficient cause, air, impels the ingredients cause, water, to form itself into bubbles, so by his glance, the Supreme Purusha, who's the Supreme Purusha? Who is Krishna. The, yeah, it's Krishna, he's the Supreme Purusha. Okay, the Supreme Purusha inspires Prakriti to transform herself into the array of material elements, and the innumerable material forms manifest from these elements. Prakriti thus serves as the upadana karna, or ingredient cause of creation. In the ultimate issue, however, since she is also an expansion of the Supreme Lord, it is the Lord alone who is the ingredient cause as well as the efficient cause. This is stated in the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.2.1. Tasmad va Etasmad Atmana Akasha Sambhuta. From the Supreme Soul, the ether evolved. And so, Kamayata Bahu Sham Prajajaya. He desired, let me become many by expanding into progeny. The individual jiva souls are not created when born from the Supreme Lord, and Prakriti, nor are they destroyed when they merge back into the Lord, rejoining him in the pleasure pastimes of his eternal kingdom. Where's that eternal kingdom? Yeah, Goloka Vrindavan. We can't wait to get there. And in the same way as an infinitesimal jivas can appear to undergo birth and death without any factual change, the Supreme Lord can send forth and withdraw his emanations without himself undergoing any transformation. Thus, the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad affirms, Avinasi Vare Yam Atma. This Atma is indeed indestructible, a statement that can be applied to both the spirit soul and the subordinate jiva soul, or the supreme soul and the subordinate jiva soul. As explained by Srila Sridhar Swami, the dissolution of the living being's material condition occurs in two ways, partial and complete. Partial dissolution occurs when the soul experiences dreamless sleep, when he leaves his body, and when all souls re-enter the body of Mahavishnu at the time of universal annihilation. Okay, so when you go to sleep, you're not aware of anything going on, right? If you're not dreaming, you're just there. So that's one dissolution that occurs. And then the other is when the souls are drawn back into Mahavishnu. What does he do that draws everything back into him? You know? That's right. He breathes in. And when he breathes in, everything goes back into him. Imagine that. Pretty amazing. These different types of dissolution are like the mixing of nectar brought by bees from different kinds of flowers. The different flavors of nectar represent the dormant individual karmic reaction of each living entity, which still exists but cannot easily be distinguished from one another. In contrast, the ultimate dissolution of the soul's material condition is its liberation from samsara. which is like the flowing of rivers into the ocean. As the waters from different rivers merge together after entering the ocean and become indistinguishable from one another, so the false material designations of the jivas are given up at the time of liberation, and all the liberated jivas once again become equally situated as servants of the Supreme Lord. The Upanishads describe these dissolutions as follows. Thank you. My dear boy, this partial dissolution resembles what happens when honeybees collect honey by extracting the nectar from the flowers of various kinds of trees and merge it all into a single mixture. Just as the mixed nectars cannot be distinguished, I am the juice of such and such a flower, or I am the juice of another flower. So, dear boy, when all these living entities merge together, they cannot consciously think, now we have merged together. Chandogya Upanishad 6:9-2. As rivers flow to their dissolution in the sea, giving up their names and forms at their destination, so the wise man who becomes freed from material names and forms attains to the Supreme Absolute, the wonderful personality of Godhead. Mundaka Upanishad 3:2-8. Srila Sridhar Swami prays. Yasmin Utya Vilaya Apiyat Vati Vashvam Vatya. The Supreme Lord is self-effulgently omniscient. By his great mercy, this universe, which is subject to repeated creation and destruction, remains present within him after merging back into him, along with the living entities at the time of cosmic dissolution. This total withdrawal of the universal manifestation occurs suddenly, like the flowing of a river into the ocean. Within the core of my heart, I meditate upon that master of the three worlds, Lord Nrisimha. Bye. Amagyanati mirandasya jananjana salakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, so reading this translation, you could definitely get the wrong idea. You could think, oh, we're all going to merge at the end and become one. And there's a nice story one time in the Kumbh Mela. Srila Prabhupada was there and the devotees were there with him. And there was one sadhu that was arguing, I think with Guru Das. He was telling the story at the manor one time, and he said, he kept saying, no, we all become one. We're all one. And Guru Das was saying, no, no, we're all separate, and you should come and offer your obeisances to my Guru Maharaj. And he says, no, no, we're all one. He's saying, okay, if we're all one, and he took his chadar, his blanket from his shoulder, and he pulled out one string and he gave it to the sadhu. He said, I take your blanket and you stay warm with this string. And he said, when you want your blanket back, you come offer your obeisances to my spiritual master. So during the Kumbh Mela, it's very cold, very cold. So he said, around dusk, when it was starting to get dark, the sadhu came walking up to the tent, shivering, said, "Okay, I want my blanket back." He said, "So it's not all one." I said, "No, it's not all one. Where is your Guru Maharaj? I want to pay my obeisances." So just like that, such a simple way of understanding. It isn't all one. Everything is not all one. So here in the purport, it's explaining to us it is not all one. And the translation first talks about the living beings that combine with nature. And what is it compared to? You remember? Something that you experience when you go to the sea. Bubbles, yeah. So you see when you're in the ocean and you see the waves come, okay, and the waves are carrying water and air and they mix them together and then you see all bubbles happening, right? So that is the mixing of the air and that is compared to the prakriti or the material nature and the living entities mixing, okay? But neither of them are independent. Okay, and neither of them are supreme enjoyers of what they do. They're both subordinate to Krishna. And what does Krishna say, or Lord Brahma actually says in the Brahma Samhita? He talks about the cause of all causes. Do you all know that verse? Ishvaraha Parama Krishna Sachid Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakara Nakaranam Sarvakarna Karnam. He says, "I am the cause of all causes." So neither this material nature or the bubbles, nor the air, nor the water are the actual cause of all causes. Krishna is the cause behind all of that. He's the one who creates this material nature, and he's also the one that gives the soul. We're part and parcel of him, which is the soul, and neither is ever annihilated. Okay, just like Krishna is never annihilated, so his parts and parcels, which are all living entities, are never annihilated. Just like that clay pot, the pot may be annihilated. It may seem to be annihilated, but even it isn't annihilated. It just goes back into the earth as clay. But the air, the soul, is also not annihilated. It is there still, okay? It's part and parcel of Krishna. So then he says also, just as rivers merge into an ocean, okay? So have you ever been to where the rivers actually go into the ocean? Has anybody been there to a site? One time in Africa, we were camping. Gurukul went on a camping trip, right? And we went to this, we thought it was going to be a state park with, you know, calm type place. But where we went was wild, all animals. And we arrived there at nighttime and one of the state trooper guys had to help us get in because every time you stopped the truck, it sunk into the sand. And it was like 25 miles of sand. So the trooper said, "You drive, don't stop for anything, and I'll drive the ladies' van, and I won't." So I'm driving like crazy, not stopping because you think. Then we get there, and it's dark, and there's all kinds of animals, and you hear all, and the trooper guy was going to the park. Man was saying, "I can't believe you ladies brought all these kids out here by yourselves," because it was like 30 children and 4 ladies. And we were thinking it was like an American state park. So then he said, don't let the kids go past that sign over there. And I said, "Why?" He said, "You'll see in the morning. Just don't let them go that direction if they need to go to the bathroom or anything during the night." I said, "Okay." So in the morning when we woke up, there was a river that went into the ocean there. It was so beautiful. But there were all these hippopotamuses and crocodiles in there that if you went past that place, you could have been munched for their dinner. But the river, you could see the color of the river was coming in, and then suddenly it just merged into the color of the ocean. And you could see a little a little bit of like cloud right when it came in. But then after that, it was all the blue ocean again. So that's what it's explaining here, is that afterwards, we are just like that. We're still individual. Like Prabhupada always gave the example of the drop of water in the ocean, right? The ocean and the drop are different. And even when the drop goes into the ocean, it's still a drop and it's still in there. And when we go back to Krishna, we're still an individual person. And because we're not trying to get liberation like the yogis that are trying to merge with Krishna, our going back to Krishna means we get to be who we really are in the spiritual world. Do any of you know who you really are? If you think about it, who am I? Just the other day I was thinking that for some reason. Suddenly it struck me in my mind, I don't even know who I am. Who am I? Really? Yeah, we know that much, that we're Gopi Bhartu Padakamala, we're the servant of the servant of the servant of the damsel. But who are we in the spiritual world? What position will we have? What service will we do there for Krishna? Will we be a cow giving milk for Krishna? Will we be a bamboo stick that maybe gets to be one of Krishna's flutes? Will we be a tree giving Krishna flowers? You know, who are we? Will we be a cowherd boy playing with Krishna in the pasturing grounds? Will we be one of the motherly gopis that are trying to help take care of Krishna, telling Mother Yashoda, no, don't spank Krishna, even though he was naughty. Don't do that. It's okay. Even though he was stealing our yogurt and butter, it's all right. Don't punish him. You know, will we... what service? Will we be a gopi or a manjari serving the gopis that are serving Krishna? We don't know who we are. Okay, but we know that we are someone individual. We're not going to merge into a white light. What a horrible existence. Can you imagine? Compare yourself in those nice situations of being with Krishna and playing in the pasturing grounds, playing on Agasura's body, climbing up and having great fun, to merging into a light and just being nothing. I mean, what an awful thought, right? So this is not talking about that merging. That is not what the Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining. That is not what the Vedas are saying. But it is here, and it can be easily misunderstood if we don't have the guidance of the spiritual master. And that's where the importance of a spiritual master is, and the importance of sadhu sangha, association of sadhus. Because they can explain to us things that we don't understand, right? Because it's easy to misunderstand some things. Just like when I was getting ready, I've forgotten that I was giving class today. And then yesterday I remembered suddenly. I thought, oh no. And I read the verse and I was going, what? What does that mean? I don't understand. I had to keep reading over and over. And I thought, okay, let me read the purport. And then suddenly, through Krishna, he gives the understanding by which you can come to me. He is the remembrance and forgetfulness. So I'm usually in a forgetful stage. But suddenly Krishna gave me some remembrance, okay, so that I could start understanding what was being meant here. Because very easy to misunderstand. And then at the very end, it's so nice how Sridhar Swami gives this verse and says, you know, I pray, I offer my obeisances to Nrisingadev, you know, who is the master of all the universes. Because all of this philosophy is just to bring us to the point of understanding, wow, Krishna is so amazing. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, and let me try to serve him and get to know him better. Right? That's what all of this is for. The Vedas are just explaining how amazing the Supreme Lord is, how amazing this whole material manifestation, what to speak of Krishna. And In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, this is just a spark of my splendor. Okay, if you have a huge, big bonfire going on, and there's a little spark, it's nothing compared to the bonfire, right? So just like that, this material creation, which is so amazing. Like, we have this tree outside of our house, this big mulberry tree. And I was hoping to make some jam for Krishna out of these mulberries. But the birds and the squirrels also have their idea of what to do with these mulberries, right? So any moment of any time of the day, you walk out the door, the squirrels all run out of the tree. Some days there'll be 5, some days there'll be 10. Yesterday I saw one with this huge mulberry in his mouth running away. And then all these birds go flying out of the tree when you get right under it. They all run away. They're all trying to enjoy the fruits of this tree, but so am I. And I started thinking, whose tree is this anyway? I'm thinking this is my tree, and I'm going to use these fruits for something. The birds are thinking, hey, get out of my tree. They go up into a higher tree and start squawking at me when I come near the tree. They're saying, get away from our tree. Those are our fruits. And the squirrels are all running off going, well, I'm just stealing fruits of this tree. So we're all thinking this material creation is ours and we're here to enjoy it, right? This is ours and we're here to enjoy it. And not only that, but I'm the supreme enjoyer. And all of you are here to help me enjoy myself, right? No? It's not like that? What is it like? Serving Krishna. He's the supreme enjoyer, right? And that's why he's called Purusha. He's the enjoyer. He's the supreme enjoyer. We're just little enjoyers. In fact, Prabhupada called us thieves. We're just like the squirrels. We're thieving, right? We're just taking and trying to enjoy it. But because we're not the real enjoyers, we can't enjoy it. It's not possible. All of our enjoyment ends. Say I give you a big, huge pot full of ice cream. Do you all like ice cream? Okay, if I gave you a whole pot of ice cream and I said, okay, this is your favorite ice cream. Eat it all right now while I'm watching. Well, you'd think, sure, I saw somebody do this one time on the Festival of India. And they were going, oh, I could eat 2 or 3 of those. So Madhua said, go for it. Start eating. And at first he was eating, eating, eating. And then it started slowing down. And as he got full, he could hardly raise the spoon up. And they're going, come on, you have 2 more. I can't eat all that. So that enjoyment started off, wow, I'm going to enjoy. But after enjoying, so-called enjoying, for 15 minutes, the enjoyment became suffering. And the idea of 2 more cartons of ice cream, you know what it's like when you're full and someone brings you something to eat? You go, no, thank you. Even if it's something you love eating, you think, oh, the thought of it makes you feel a bit sick. So that's material enjoyment. We're thinking we're going to enjoy, we're going to eat all this, or we're going to, whatever, get this fancy car that we're going to ride around really fast, and we're going fast, and then the policeman comes and gives you a ticket, or you crash your new car and it's finished. So many things that we think we're going to enjoy that can lead to suffering. Because we are not the supreme enjoyers. That's not our position. But just like I get the privilege of dressing the deities once a week, so when I'm on the altar dressing the deities, it's just so wonderful that you just forget any kind of suffering. You're enjoying, and that's real enjoyment. Because your enjoyment is by serving the Lord and for his enjoyment. You see, that brings real enjoyment, is by doing that. Or say on special days, For us, I always make a bunch of milk sweets to offer to the Lord because we have lots of milk, right? So milking the cows before that, I'm thinking, oh, I get to use this for making different milk sweets for the Lord. And then I go in and I spend hours and hours and hours cooking down burfi, making rasgullas, so many things to offer the Lord. And the whole time, it's much more enjoyable than when I'm cooking dinner for us to take for Sodom, if I'm not thinking of Krishna, because actually we're cooking it for Krishna. But if I forget that and think I'm cooking this for me to enjoy or for my family to enjoy, the effect is not the same, because I'm thinking I'm the enjoyer. So really, it's just a change of consciousness, understanding who is the Purusha. And who is the Purusha? Krishna, yes, he is the Purusha. And we are Prakriti. We are the enjoyed. So the more we try to make Krishna's life enjoyable, you know, if you have some nice flowers in your garden, you could pick some and offer to your deities or bring to the temple to offer to Krishna. If you have nice fruits or something growing, you could bring that for Krishna to enjoy. You know, it's the same thing going on. Prabhupada gave the example one time of someone picking a beautiful rose and thinking, let me take this to my girlfriend. And someone else comes and sees the beautiful rose and thinks, oh, let me take this to the temple. This would look so beautiful in Radharani's hand. Okay, so they're doing the same thing. They're going to pick that same rose, but the consciousness is different. And that's when you become a real servant of the Lord. You start understanding, let me give this to Krishna. Let me be a servant of Krishna. And that will bring you real enjoyment. Not the enjoyment of trying to enjoy your body. Because the body's like that clay pot, and what is it? Temporary, right? It's gone. And when you get older, you're quite happy it's going because it's not enjoyable anymore. When you're young, the body works so well and it's an enjoyable vehicle for enjoyment. But when it gets older and starts falling apart, the enjoyment plummets, right? That's why now we have to practice knowing, okay, let me give this to Krishna. One devotee one time said it's kind of like if you put a thief in a bank to be the teller, you'd keep telling the thief, just keep saying, this is the bank's money, one, this is the bank's money, two, this is the bank's money. That's what we have to do. This is Krishna's, this is Krishna's, this is for Krishna's enjoyment. To get it into our brains that we're not the supreme enjoyers of all that we see. Thank you for being such a nice audience. Haribol. Okay, so I guess I'll wrap it up there. And if there's any discussion or questions, there's been a lot of discussion lately, and that would be nice. This is the winding up of the suddenly. So are there any like questions or discussion? Or, you know, I was thinking, for me, all of these things, they're interesting, but already you know that Krishna is the Lord and that you want to serve him and you want to give everything for him. So it's almost like difficult to kind of get your mind around just thinking of Krishna as the Purusha rather than as this beautiful blackish blue boy playing a flute, you know, and herding his cows, and you know, so it's kind of I guess a bit difficult for me to get around all of these concepts, but I see the importance of understanding that so that we can understand how great. So we don't take Krishna just as like a sahajya would, just as, you know, we dance the Ratha dance just like Krishna, so that we think that we're Krishna. I understand how important it is to understand that we are not Krishna and that we are just tiny parts and parcels. You know, which of us could wind up, like Prabhupada was saying, he's not even, or Sridhar Swami was saying, he's not even affected when he winds up the whole, you know, it's not like he gets bigger, or, you know, he's just breathing. He's not even making any extra effort to do all of this, to make the whole creation come, to wind it back in. It's so amazing. You know, such a, I mean, so we can understand our Lord is the most amazing personality. But then we go farther past that, and then to how sweet he really is, and how sweet his pastimes are, and how sweet service to him is. Okay, so if anybody would like to say anything or add.
I think like the idea of getting it more to the idea of getting it so oriented. So,
the idea becomes so boring. Reminded me of one pastime. Prabhupada went to Bombay, a rich man's house. That time there was no ISKCON yet. There was no building yet in Bombay. So inside the big hall room of living, Prabhupada was told by Mahaman Prabhu, one of your god brother, that there is the Swamiji. He's the impersonalist. They don't have any altar. They have a deity, no form. So then that Maharaj came out, and he's kind of like a family guru, but big, powerful, impersonalist. So only Prabhupada can do such thing. He sat down, and then he's speaking to the whole audience, and all the rich people's team immediately just showed up, you know, and they're all sitting in a floor, giving a nice place. So then, as Prabhupada is speaking and he's looking at the Swamiji, then Prabhupada says, you know, Maharaj says that God has no form, but he was lying. Don't, you know, I know he believed there is a God, has a beautiful form, very attractive. Maharaj just testing, and this Maharaj is like overwhelmed, bewildered by Prabhupada's presence.
So instead of not saying anything, then Prabhupada just went on.
Don't listen, Maharaj, at all. Just believe it's beautiful.
And then he told
Mahaman Prabhu, in our car there is a big photo of Gornita, just bring it and put it in the altar. So they put it. See how beautiful? Maharaj just was testing, and this Maharaj is just laughing and laughing. I don't know what he was getting out of it. And he said, all the things he said about impersonalism, just forget about all this. Don't listen to him anymore. So Maharaj, what do you do hidingly in your house? You worship also Krishna form? You should introduce that. They should worship only Krishna's form. And they were surprised that since that day, actually, the whole family, everybody changed.
Wow.
And they started worshipping. I guess only Prabhupada could do so.
Sari Sangha.
Yeah.
Saving his face, but, yeah, that's amazing. Anyone else? Yeah, I can't imagine impersonal, like living impersonally, not having your deities to cook for or dress or, you know, come and dance and sing before. How dry. I can't even, an altar with no one there. I can't even imagine.
In Kopilnath's Tarkanta, I remember Prabhupada said that the gyani actually suffers.
Yeah.
During the day, they're trying to restrain their senses from the sense of it. So they're like trying so hard, and they just overwhelmed with this hard struggle. And at night they have a dream, and then in the morning they regret, oh, I had a dream of him. Whole life they suffer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see how easy, like for me, fasting is difficult. But when I know this is a fast day, the whole day my mind's saying, no, this is Krishna's day, you're not eating. And then it becomes so much more easy. You have a reason, not just fast, you know, just to be austere, or, you know, that would be so difficult. Yeah, you see how much easier. Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, like we used to go chanting in the streets in London, and you get people going, get a job! You should go get a job! You know, and then someone told Prabhupada, and he said, yes, they're wanting you to suffer like them. But you say, no, come join us. You know, you can also be happy chanting and dancing and feasting. What is the problem? Right? What is the difficulty? Prabhupada would say, what is the difficulty? So, you know, they make it so difficult, but Krishna makes it so... Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and made it so easy, just chanting these sweet names. You know, we have it so easy. And then go back and enjoy the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, both simultaneously even. Pretty amazing. We don't even have to choose which one to be part of. It's just incredible. It's so nice now, and so much bliss to look forward to also. So, okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you.